The measure of a truly great man is not only his achievement, but his modesty. Some time ago, one of the foremost American mathematicians, President Callahan of Duquesne University in Pittsburgh, related how he had ventured to criticize some minor aspect of Professor Albert Einstein's epical theory of relativity. Dr. Einstein promptly acknowledged the criticism and welcomed it. America feels honored in providing a haven for a European scientist whose name will live long after the fury of political storms that exiled him from his native land is forgotten. It is our privilege to present the Nobel Prize winner in science for 1921, Professor Albert Einstein of Princeton, New Jersey.
Civilized man has a feeling of superiority toward primitive man. He considers himself, so to speak, as a higher being. Does he not live in an ingeniously constructed house instead of a clay hut? Does he not travel by railroad, by automobile, and by steamship? Also, he reads newspapers, has a rather complicated language, and uses the telephone and the radio. In short, he is proud of employing his finer tools. There is, however, one advantage which primitive man has. He is acquainted with the primitive tools of which he is using. He can make his own bow and arrow, in fact, even his own canoe. How many of the civilized people have to any extent a clear idea about the nature and the origin of the things, the use or consumption of which he feels so much to be a matter of course? Just ask 100 people of the street what really happens in a telephone apparatus or in a radio receiver and how the electric current is produced which lights their homes at night, then you will see that most of them live like strangers in the world of the things entrusted to them. Does not such a man live like a worthless son of the inherited money in the acquisition of which he has no part? To that you will reply, this does not prove anything. It is enough if each one knows his own calling and thus repays in some way to society for which he receives from it. It is just this specialization, you will say, which makes civilization possible. This I grant you, to be sure. Nevertheless, the matter has its questionable side. Society can only then bloom and thrive when it is esteemed by the individual composing it, when the individual can feel happy as a member of it, when he feels that he is not treated as a mere tool which works all his life only under coercion. If he has no real inner share in the striving of the group, then he readily becomes an enemy of society. Precisely this specialization causes him to consider his own contribution to the work as meaningless if he cannot join in experiencing the creative striving of the community. Each one has a right to share in the knowledge and understanding which society provides. And it is to the great advantage of all. If this interest in the moral and spiritual possessions of the society is awakened and kept alive. With this, I have already said why I consider the creation and furthering of an institution like this museum to be beneficial and important. Here will to be placed the creative deeds of investigator and inventor before the eyes of each one in whom the spark of curiosity has not been completely extinguished in the grayness of the daily struggle of life. He also obtains an insight based on immediate observation of facts into the governing of the eternal connection of nature, on which all technical production is based. Such an institution deserves zealous furthering and the grateful interest of all.